So, hey, another weekend, another caucus, and another win for Barack Obama. He won Wyoming, a pretty small state delegate-wise, only 12 up for grabs, and he only got 7 of those. Hillary Clinton, meanwhile, took 5. Mississippi holds its primary tomorrow with 33 delegates at stake. All this as the Democrats try to figure out if a voting do-over is an order in Michigan and Florida, stripped of their delegates when they violated party rules and scheduled their contest too early in the calendar for the Democratic Party's liking. The other side of the aisle is much more settled as far as the presidential race is concerned, with John McCain the sure Republican nominee. But after a special election in Chicago, the GOP has lost a seat in the House of Representatives. As always, Jim Vandehei of Politico.com is here to make sense of this crazy world for us and predict the future, which we know is impossible, but we ask him to do it anyway, and he does it with such panache that we just can't help but bring him back. Hey, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing just fine this morning. Okay, first things first. Double-digit win in Wyoming for Obama, but not much of a delegate payoff. Which is more important, being declared the winner or getting the delegates?
At this point, it's the delegates for Barack Obama, because at the end of the day, he wants to end this nominating process with more pledged delegates. It's almost inconceivable that the Democratic Party is going to deny the first African-American nominee the nomination if he has more pledged delegates. He knows that. And so he's tried this from the beginning, work all 50 states, maximize the number of delegates, regardless of what Hillary Clinton might say about the swing states or say about the popular vote.
Okay, let's talk about delegates. On Face of the Nation yesterday, all the Sunday talk shows talking about this, Democratic National Committee Chair Howard Dean called for his party to work out the primary situation in Michigan and Florida. Now, as we said, both these states, of course, lost their delegates when they moved their primaries up in the calendar. But now Clinton, who was the only name on the ballot in Michigan and won both states, wants them counted. Okay, what's going to happen? All of a sudden, they're floating this idea that hinges on the U.S. Postal Service?
There's no doubt they're going to find a solution that's going to have both Florida and Michigan revote. Right now, you have a lot of posturing and positioning because people don't want to actually have to pay for it. It can be pretty expensive. I mean, the estimates are anywhere in Florida from $10 to $20 million, $10 million roughly in Michigan. Neither of the states want their taxpayers to have the burden of picking that up. So they're trying to figure out how can we do this, you know, sort of on the cheap and actually get her done in time. A lot of talk now, maybe doing it vote by mail. I think they already do that in Oregon. There's ways to make sure that it's relatively safe. It's certainly less expensive than some of the other options. I also wouldn't be surprised if some folks on the outside step up and say, listen, we'll foot the bill for this. There's a lot of rich Democrats out there who give money to 527s and outside groups, so there's no reason they can't step in and throw down a cool 10 mil for Michigan and Florida.
Is this putting a lot of pressure clearly on Howard Dean?
It is, but I mean, Howard Dean is just, he's not a super strong leader of the DNC, and basically he's not going to be the final referee. He's saying, let's leave it up to the states, make the states make the decision, because he doesn't want the DNC to foot the bill. The DNC essentially has no money in the bank right now. They spent the bulk of which they've raised in the last year, so there's no way the DNC is going to cover that cost. They want somebody from the outside, or they want the states to end up picking this up. You know, heck, Hillary Clinton should probably raise the money and finance both of these because it's her lifeline. The only chance she has to win the nomination is to have a revote in Florida and Michigan, and for her to win both of those states convincingly. That would allow her to possibly narrow or eliminate the gap on pledged delegates and possibly narrow or eliminate the gap on the popular vote. Without those two states, she has no chance.
Okay, two smaller issues I want to ask you about. The Democrats picked up Dennis Hastert's seat in the House in a special election in Chicago over the weekend. The GOP was supposed to be able to hold on to that, but
right. No
talk about what went down. And why does this matter? Why does this vote matter?
I think it's huge. I think it's one of the biggest political stories of the last couple of weeks. It's hard to think of House races as sexy or that interesting or being that revelatory of anything that's happening in the nation. But this is big. This is a very Republican district. It was held by the Speaker of the House. Everybody thought Republicans would pretty easily hold a seat, even in a difficult election. They lost it. They lost it by 6 points. It shows once again that especially at the ground level, Republicans have a big, big problem, particularly with independent voters and Republicans that are open-minded about voting for a Democrat. You know, we've seen all the trend lines, the polling numbers. If you look at the generic matchup, rarely do you see Democrats with this kind of advantage this far out in an election. It's clear that the generic voter now really does favor the Democratic Party, mostly because I think they're just sick of Republican rule, they're sick of Bush, they're sick of the war. That can change, but it's hard to change because all of this psychology factors into what's happening on the ground. Republicans are raising a lot less money in these races. They are not as organized. They're not able to recruit the kind of quality candidates you need to win some of these tough seats. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff has a snowball effect.
The other thing I wanted to run by, big news over the past week, Samantha Power, one of Obama's foreign policy advisors, stepped down after calling Clinton a monster. This was all over the news.
Right.
Is this just another, is there any significant takeaway from this?
You know, I often have a different view of this. And I find she called her a monster, yippee, in politics.
Don't people do that all the time?
Who cares? I mean, I was kind of surprised that Obama wouldn't stand by what has been described as one of his closest advisors on foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly a super bright woman who's got a very active mind when it comes to thinking about foreign policy. He's relied on her immensely in the campaign. And just because the Clinton campaign says, hey, you promise not to be mean, he dumps her. He allows her to resign from the campaign.
Or maybe this means, you know, he means what he says. He's running a clean campaign, even if it costs him the nomination.
Maybe.
Or close advisors.
It is a different type of politics, and he has to stand by it. But the truth is, like, I know a lot of people around him, I mean, they understand how you play politics.
Yeah.
And the truth is, you can't play politics with sort of kid gloves, nor can you deal with foreign dictators with kid gloves.
Yeah.
So there's a fine line between, like, really trying to change the tone of politics and not sort of standing up and fighting in the arena. And that's the frustration you have from some folks around Obama now, is that the Clintons, who love to rip off the gloves and go bare knuckle, they do it all the time, they do it pretty well, and they're worried that, well, wait, our guy's got to at least stand up and fight back, obviously within appropriate boundaries, because he really does want to change sort of how he runs his campaign. But I was surprised by that one.
Let's talk briefly about the so-called Dream Unity ticket. Lots of talk this weekend. Bill Clinton spoke in Mississippi, actually reinforced Hillary's earlier comments, saying she's open to this idea of a joint ticket. There's even a YouTube video spoofing a possible dream ticket. Two actors do this whole thing, the song thing from Juno. It's pretty funny. Let's listen.
You're a part-time senator, a full-time friend. I hope you be my vice when I kick your rear end. I don't see what anyone can see in anyone else. But
I've got 35
you.
Years of experience
oh,
on you.
Oh, man, that's funny. Is this even realistic, Jim?
It is brilliant, really brilliant politics on the Clintons' behalf. They know that if she were to get the nomination, she would almost certainly have to take Barack Obama as her vice president. She also knows that Barack Obama would never want her as his vice president. He's made it abundantly clear if he's really going to try to make a break from Washington, he can't, as the number two slot, have Hillary Clinton and all the baggage that comes with the Clinton name. And so it really boxes him in, because she knows he doesn't want to have to go out there and say, yeah, you know, win or lose, I'll be one or two, or win or lose, she'll be one or two, because that's not what he'd want. I don't think it would be in his strategic best interest, and I don't think it's what he would personally want as his vice president.
Okay, last, real quick, anything surprising likely to happen in Mississippi Tuesday?
I doubt it. You know, clearly this should be Obama's state to win. He'll pick up, you know, some more delegates, win, you know, sort of build on that margin a little bit on pledged delegates, and then all the focus will really be on Pennsylvania, which is a state that by most measures Hillary Clinton should win pretty handily, because it's very much like Ohio. Yet it has even more Catholics and has even more sort of the middle class whites that she did so well with or lower to middle class whites that she did so well with in Ohio.
Thank you, Jim Van
de
Hei, Politico.com. Stay with us. This is the BPP from NPR News.